There's a narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to an episode of Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul Murphy, your host. I'm joined tonight by Skari from the Skarcast.
Hello, TPM universe. How are you?
Yo, man, thanks for joining us. We are the Battle of Lost Souls podcast.
Ding!
Fresh back from Adepticon. I am, anyway. That's where most of my crew is either laid out or fulfilling some family obligations they couldn't do while they were traveling. So, Skari, thanks for pitching in.
Yeah, no worries at all. I'm always excited to do some chatting with the infamous TPM.
Thank you very much. We have a couple of segments to stick in this week. I actually did an on-site in Chicago with Carl Tuttle. I always enjoy talking with him. And I've got something to insert from CK Studios where they're talking about their Nova Open charity contribution and their classes that they do. They travel around and do airbrush classes.
Yeah, nice. They do some good work, so that's awesome.
Yeah, man. So I guess a little bit of Adepticon recap. Studio preview. They actually brought out Apocalypse, and I don't know that this was, if we talked about this before or made it clear enough, they seemed to be, or they were pretty confident that you could play Apocalypse over the course of one evening.
Wow, interesting. I don't know how they do that, but when I think Apocalypse, I think, you know, tens of thousands of points on each side. It was funny because the announcement came basically a few days after we had set up a huge Apocalypse game with one of my friends, Kyle, and he brought about 60,000 points of orcs to play. And we ended up doing it over the course of a weekend, but that would have not been something that I feel would have been possible in an evening.
I'm really curious to see how they pull it off as well. I know that playing with all your big toys and sometimes having those mega battles is something, you know, people do. And if there's, and it is, it's typically something that has to be done over the course of several days or at least a really, really long day. And if you can get that same experience, in a shorter time frame, I don't think anybody's going to complain.
Well, yeah. So I'm curious. You know, I saw there was like some movement trays and stuff like that. And there seemed to be a variety of different like counters and things that they added in. So I love Apocalypse. So I hope that it'll be something worthwhile.
Yeah, man. So at Adepticon, I played in a team event and we did not do as well as we hoped we would do. Nobody to blame but ourselves. There were at least one game where our opponents absolutely took us to the house of rolling sixes. I mean, it was
the... That's plan roll sixes. It works.
It was
every time.
The Church of Five Plus. That's about the only way to describe it. I mean, and these were just... I mean, there was no shenanigans. These guys were stand-up, absolute great guys to play against. But it was everything they wanted to do worked. Nothing we wanted to do worked. And sometimes that's just the way Warhammer is.
Yep, and then you brush it off and move on to the next one.
That's exactly right. I mean, you play enough games and that stuff's always going to happen. And I always say this, but if I can take the L against some really good people, I'll try that game again, no problems, any day of the week.
Oh, yeah, 100%. It's about who you play against, not necessarily just the result.
The real tragedy is we did not make the showcase.
I heard about that. I'm very surprised. You know, you did a lot of very... Like, your army looked awesome, and the display looked great. So I've never been to Adepticon. I don't know what their criteria is, but I'm surprised because, you know, when you were, like, you finishing segments and the amount of work you put in into your miniatures, like, there must have been some crazy competition if that's the case.
I wish I could say that with confidence. No, there really were. I am a little salty about it, and I'm going to try to not let all that salt come out. There were, without questions, better-looking armies there than ours, and those armies were in the showcase. There was a lot, or there were at least a handful in there that I think that we were better than, but I think they were mixing up what their selection for the showcase criteria was this year, and I think we were on the unfortunate cusp on it of it, because it is perceptive. You know, it's just... it's subjective. It's incredibly subjective once you get to that point. And if we weren't what the judge wanted that day, then, you know, I guess that's what it is. And now I will say that one of the judges looked at the bottom of my tanks to see if they were painted, and they probably weren't painted as well as the top. But if it was that narrow, then hey.
Well, you know, it's definitely at judge's discretion, I would guess.
Yeah, that's what I think. I think that it was subjective, and I think we were an unfortunate casualty of some subjectivity and maybe some policy changes. I don't know, but I am incredibly proud of what we put together as a team. GMM's display was, I mean, we did tailor some of the army to look good on that display.
Yeah.
And of course, he did a stellar job with that display.
Yeah, the display looked great, too.
And when you put our blue figures on that red display and the bases matching the way that they did, it to me, I mean, when I was taking pictures on my iPhone 6, that's how I am. I'm probably going to get a new one this year. No one freak out. just the cinematic views of the figures and that terrainscape were amazing. And I posted them up on Twitter and Instagram. I'm Fights with Dice on Instagram and at Warmaster_TPM on Twitter. Please check them out. So we are just incredibly proud of it. And I did. I painted the army in 3 months. And it was
I remember following all the updates, you know, so it was really cool to see you kind of working on every single element at a time.
Yeah, it was fun. It was nice to know that I could do that in that period of time. Now, look, in my heart of hearts, I would have rather have been painting my orcs and had all the boys done by now. But that's kind of the beauty of a team event. You get together with some buddies, you figure out what needs to be done, and then you do it. And they were very helpful too. People providing things when they need to be provided, people getting, somebody had to transport that thing there. I mean, everyone, it's a really a team environment.
Well, that's a cool thing, especially of like the Adepticon team tournament, which a lot of folks, you know, forget that is the premier event at Adepticon. Mm-hmm. You know, like they look at the 40K championships and whatnot, which is great. It's a big championship event at the singles, but Adepticon was built on that four man team event.
Yeah, it's a spectacle. It's worth it. It's worth it to come and play. If you've never done it, you really should try to get there. Now, even if you can't get a crowd of four, sometimes just showing up with all your teammates is part of the experience.
Yeah.
And if that can't happen, there's tons of other things to do there. But it's worth coming out. If you can only make it for a couple of days, no matter when it is over the course of the convention, you're going to have a good time.
Yeah, I haven't gone, but I'm going to try and make it next year for sure.
Oh man, I can't wait to see you there. I did get to do some commentary on the Games Workshop Twitch stream.
Oh, nice.
For Age of
Sigmar. How was that?
It was fun. You know, I love talking about Warhammer.
It was your impromptu audition, eh?
Well, this is for the Sigmar side. I've been on before. They thankfully let me kind of haunt the stream every now and then.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, yeah, again, a real great weekend. I get to see people that you only see a few times a year. The lobby of the hotel is set up really cool. So it's got a lot of kind of breakout places, but still, you're still in the lobby visible to everyone. But they've got these big open seating areas. And we played board games all night. I mean, I'm talking about, you know, a little bit Kung Fu fighting and a handful of other games of playing basically every night. Great, great way to spend a weekend.
That's fantastic. It's like a getaway within a getaway.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Looking already planning next year. So, you know, all the saltiness of not making the showcase aside, already figuring out what to do for next year. And it's just that kind of event. The people that run, I'm actually going to have Matthias Weeks back on really soon, hopefully next week, to talk about the kind of the breakdown and recap of Adepticon. Talk about, you know, it's the biggest it's ever been. It had offsite events. I mean, thousands of people, thousands.
Tons and tons of folks coming to play some games. You know, and it's really cool because ever since I've been in the hobby, especially here in Canada, you know, all I've heard of is Adepticon this and Adepticon that. And, you know, I see teams that go there every single year, and every year they kind of build something up and they have a plan and they set it in motion. It's kind of really cool to see how something like that can bring like communities together. It's really neat. And that's one of the unique things about our hobby, like in particular. I feel it's a very giving hobby when it comes to community.
Yeah, absolutely, man. On this episode, I want to talk about some Chaos stuff. Now, Chaos is getting, you know, they've gotten a lot of attention, a lot of new kits.
here we are talking about family and right into chaos. Murder and destruction.
Dude, chaos, I think the game is better when there's strong bad guys, like visually and
I power agree.
In the game. And where chaos has gotten that love. Now, you know, Havoc's going up to T5, getting the ability to move and shoot.
Amazing. Oh, yeah.
I wrote an article on Terminators. And this is something that's actually, it's divisive. Terminators are divisive because Terminators are kind of difficult to find a home in the game right now.
They are, but I feel like they have a lot of latent potential. And I honestly, there's so much stuff. Like the new Vigilus book and the new Chaos book, they gave Chaos so many different cool combos. I think it's going to take a little bit for it to sink in and for people to really find the combinations that make certain builds very, very strong and powerful. And I love Terminators. Like a cheap Terminator is, what, 29 points with a combi bolter and a chain axe?
Yeah.
So you're getting 10 of these bad boys for less than 300 points. You don't even have to mark them. And you can, if you're using Black Legion, spend one command point to give them every mark in the Chaos book for the turn, for the battle round, which allows them to use pretty much every stratagem that is specific to a Chaos God. So you could have them, you know, shooting twice in the shooting phase and attacking twice in the combat phase and this and that. That it's pretty, like, I would not, like, some of the lists I've seen have 10 of these guys in like every list that I've really seen that's worth its salt.
That's interesting because I think they're one of those units that you can't go into expecting to use very well without a plan. And what you just described was a really good plan. You know, combi plasma, and I actually proposed making them close combat units with lightning claws.
Yeah.
With the ability to, you know, get that reroll charge and to potentially fight again with stratagems also. And I think they actually are going to excel better when they're living in close combat because you can limit what fire can come back at them or maybe you force a unit to fall back, limiting what it can shoot at you.
Exactly. Not only that, but having all the different marks, you can regenerate them and bring them back to life and you can, it's honestly, do out there, do some testing. Don't just take what you hear at face value, put it on the table and physically test it.
Yeah, nothing gets around that. And but then people rightly pointed out, well, people will just fall back. You're not going to live in close combat. But then, you know, on the other side, and this is something that wasn't explicitly spelled out in what I wrote, was that they're on big bases. It's a lot easier to try to lock a unit into close combat by hostage taking. You know, the way we describe it is where they can't, it's physically impossible for them to fall back.
Yeah, hostage taking would be good, or even mixing it with other chaos things like Scarbrand that doesn't allow enemies to fall back, or
Fiends of Slaanesh. Yeah.
Slaanesh Fiends, right, that don't allow you to fall back either. So there are a lot of different ways that you can kind of achieve the same goals.
Well, this is part of what I'm talking about with the divisiveness of chaos. Now, because you've got a large group of people that want to go into, I want to be singles faction chaos. I play the World Eaters Legion or Emperor's Children or whatever, and that's just what I am. Oh, and you got people that say, bring on the demons, bring on the detachments with multiple legions.
Yeah, multiple legions or... especially now that the ITC has sort of put its hat in the ring after the vote for, you know, single faction, like best of faction awards or whatnot. But summoning demons and whatnot doesn't kind of stop you from, like, it doesn't let you break it. So having points to summon a demon or two can be kind of handy.
Chaos is getting a lot of options, just like we said, and even things as subtle as a thunder hammer.
Yep.
I mean, a Chaos
Lord. I'm excited.
Lord.
I love that kit. And the fact that you can have them, or so you take the index bike option or whatnot, you can have like a biker that runs around that can advance and charge, you know, if it's a renegade biker. And oh man, like when I opened the book for the first time, I was like, this feels like, it felt like I was reading an Eldar codex. It honestly, like, and I'm not saying like in terms of Eldar power, but what I'm thinking is that there are a lot of options in here, and it was cool to be able to read through it and go, you know what, it feels like I'm not exactly sure what I want to do yet with this. Like, there wasn't something that just instantly pops out at me, and I was like, that's good.
We talked a little bit about the Lord Discordant on a previous show, and the fact that he's got 12 wounds, and so he's a little bit hard to protect.
Well, yes, but at the same time, there are ways to stop him from dying. You know, you've got warlord traits that half damage, and you have specialist detachments that you can put him in to get into combat faster. And, you know, I have a good friend of mine who's looking at running three of these bad boys and running them right at your face.
Well, what I argue is that the new Dark Apostle has the ability to make, you know, a unit neg one to hit.
Don't get me started on Dark Apostles, TPM, because they are phenomenal.
Well, okay, you want to go one step beyond that. You can go into take a demons. And so a demon sorcerer of Nurgle has the Miasma of Pestilence.
Yeah.
So that's another neg one to hit.
There's so many cool combos. And that's what I meant by Eldari, is you have so many cool combos and options that you can kind of pick your poison. And there's tools in the Codex and in Vigilus to make your vision become reality. Very chaosy. Yep,
I agree with that. I want to talk about one more power from the Nurgle tree, the Virulent Blessing. You add one to wound rolls made for that unit in the fight phase. Furthermore, rolls of 7+ made for that unit in the fight phase inflict double damage.
There's also some cool combos going around with like a Chaos Lord Mark Korn with like a cool relic that does mortal wounds, and then giving him plus bonuses to hit or wound, so mm-hmm. that he's doing like two mortal wounds on 4+ in combat, which stacks up pretty heftily. So I honestly think that if you're not prepared to see chaos on the table soon, you better get your protection wards out, folks.
Well, the Lord Discordant guy is good at taking out vehicles. I shouldn't say good at taking out vehicles. He has a lot of good AP, good strength attacks.
Well, he also has bonuses to your demon engines, and he has negative modifiers to enemy vehicles.
Yes.
So not only is he going in and killing them, he's essentially, like, normally to do a -1 to hit on, like, something, you have to cast a psychic power on it or buff yourself in some way. But he just has to be around things, and not only affecting one unit, but affecting multiple units in radiuses around him.
Yeah, yeah. And his Impaler Chainglave is a damage 2 weapon that's negative 2 AP, which could go to 4 damage on wound rolls of a 7+, which, you know, basically every 6 is multiple damage. This guy is going to just stack up damage on anything, including knights, including things like shadow swords. They're going to wilt in front of this guy if you get him there.
Yeah, and I could see how that with the Virulent Blessing would just stack even further.
I don't know that by himself he's going to bring back things like Forge Fiends.
Hey, but if you do start seeing the odd Forge Fiend, Maul Fiend rush, I know most Chaos players have a couple of those hidden away in their closet gathering dust. So I wouldn't be surprised if somebody tries to make them work and surprises a lot of people.
A Lord of Skulls and a Kaitan are also demon engines.
Oh, shudder. That Tonka truck is very, very nasty. And being able to, you know, move and, like, advance and charge or something, you know, or
hitting on twos or something. Movement. I think it would hit on twos with a very powerful weapon.
Yeah, and it's got a flamer as well, and if you try and damage it, it gets better, and you can heal it if you really want to, and yeah, no, there's, honestly, I'm not holding my breath, but I think that we're going to see some very creative Chaos Lords out there squeeze the warp juices out of this codex.
Yeah, I think so too. It'll be fun. Abaddon is, of course, a beast and a great model, so you'll see him anyway.
Yeah, they made him so much better. You know, they just basically go like, oh, here's a new model. By the way, it's the same points, but all your stuff got better. You're stronger and you have more wounds. And
yeah, the Dark Apostle, I think, is getting played. I think you're going to take those kind of things anyway to do fill things like battalions to get your command points.
Well, I think Red Corsairs are going to be a big battalion command point generator.
And what is it, with the Disloyal 17 or something?
Yeah, well, the Disloyal 17 that gives you 8 command points for a battalion. You know, it's quite a lot of command points for a battalion. Plus, I wouldn't be surprised if you start seeing 20-man Red Corsair Space Marine units, since you can Tide of Traitors them. which you can take a 20-man unit of Chaos Space Marines and recycle them at full strength.
Man, that which would be, that's very frustrating.
Really? Well, that, and then do, taking a full circle, going back to Terminators, there's the Black Legion Specialist Detachment for Terminators that gives them access to a one command point stratagem to help a Heretic Astartes unit within 18 inches automatically pass morale. It's like a secondary auto-pass morale for one command point. Yeah, it's like just because the Terminator's there, they're like, we're scary, and Abaddon says you don't run, and they're like, okay.
So the Tide of Traitors is just for Chaos Cultist.
Tide of Traitors is for Chaos Cultist, but Red Corsairs get one in Vigilus for the Red Corsairs, which is exactly the same thing, but for a unit of Chaos Space Marines.
Oh, very strong.
So you have 20 Chaos Space Marines.
That's the more where they came from for 3 command points.
Exactly. So 3 command points, you can recycle your entire unit of Red Corsairs that just happened to automatically pass morale when there was one model left because they were within 18 of Abaddon's Terminators yelling at them and then bringing them back.
The power of chaos.
Oh, yes. And then I think their formation is, I mean their formation, their fortification is not bad either.
The
Noctilus, yep. Crown, mm-hmm. or whatever it's called.
Yep.
You know, it gives a 5-up invulnerable save to everybody within 6, and then it expands to 9, and then it expands to 12. So if you want your Chaos Cultists that have lost all their traits to stick around longer, just stick them by this big portal while they, you know, praise the dark gods and make them harder to shift.
Part of the game is just enduring, and anything that helps with that is good. I don't know that's going to be what most people work into their list, but you never know.
Yeah, as I said, options.
Yeah, that's true, man. Well, let's take a break. Then we'll come back with Carl and I, and then after that, we'll come back with you and I, Skari.
Awesome.
All right, see you guys in a minute.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games, Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey everybody, welcome to an Adepticon segment of Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. I'm joined this afternoon by Carl Tuttle.
Hey, how's it going?
Carl, thanks for joining me.
Oh, thanks for having me. And at the risk of repeating myself, your room is very clean.
Oh my goodness, okay. I was going to mention this too. This is our second run. I actually forgot to plug the mic in.
That's the second time I've told that joke. I know.
Well, we're talking about how there's models everywhere because there's we're just people in this room are playing in 4 or 5 different events over the course of the weekend.
Right.
And just the sheer variety of events, not even just 40K related.
Yeah. On this weekend. Yeah. I mean, you know what? I was actually surprised that there's a number of things. Is the X-Wing and Armada turnout is huge.
What would you say? How many hundred people or whatever? 100 people playing Armada?
Yeah. I think he said it was like 85 people playing Armada last night, which is like, I think they thought there'd be 24, 40, you know, 30 people, something like that. And it's way more than
that. And then the world of it. So there was people from all over the world here playing.
Yeah. Yeah. They're running out of space. I don't know what they're going to do.
And not that people from all over the world are here coming and typically playing in the 40K events.
But yeah.
It's neat that's expanding to these other games well.
Yeah. It's I love the event here. I love the feel of how friendly people are here. There's just this undercurrent of people just enjoying the hobby, you know, and it doesn't feel like, sometimes these things can kind of feel like high school, you know. That's like the comparison I make. Yeah. You know,
well, at a tournament at a traditional tournament, people get heads down.
Yeah.
They're focused on just playing their game, winning, and this is something so much different.
But they can also get focused too on like just their clique and their group of people.
Sure.
And the thing here is like, I on my thing I posted, you know, I'm excited to see friends I haven't seen in a year and meet new friends because like people are just so friendly here.
There's some people that I met in line 2 years ago that now they're part of the crew that gets together and plays out,
right.
Hangs out with us.
Right. It's that easy.
And play video, or sorry, board games and stuff.
Yeah, it's super, it's that easy. We have a guy I met here last year. Well, I mean, to a degree, we have a little bit of advantage because we have the show, you have your show, and so we have a voice there. But a guy wanted to play a game against me, so we kind of connected. We played an open game. His buddy hung out, and his buddy towards it, you know, we're all getting along. His buddy's like, oh, well, I'm moving out to the Bay Area, and I'm going to work for Apple. And I'm like, oh, well, you're going to be in my neck of the woods. You should come play with us.
Heck yeah.
And now he's a member of our regular gaming group, and he's here this year as well with, you know, his friend who still lives in Minnesota, but we've all become super tight. So
that's really cool.
Yeah, I just love how many friends I've met.
Yeah, and we always talk about the common ground. Like when you were coming even to a table in a far off land. There's so many things that are similar about the person across the table from you that have brought you to the
point. Yeah.
Last night I played two different card games and two different board games. Yeah. And they had not Warhammer related in the slightest, but we're all hanging out and enjoying this.
And I'm pretty much a mono gamer. Like, I'm pretty much 40K. Like, I dabble in Age of Sigmar a little bit. But one of the things I do like, and I'll play a few board games. One of the things I do really like to do here is try out demos of games that I have no interest in potentially buying, but you never know. You might just like that Arena Rex game kind of interests me because the models are so beautiful. And I'm just like, I don't know if I'd like this, but then they had a tournament going on and I'm sitting there watching guys play and they're clearly enjoying themselves. Yeah. And that kind of draws me in when I see people have fun with something.
Yeah. Oh man. I went to Coombs Corner last night, which is the heavy metal burger bar. Have you been there yet?
No. Where's that?
It's 5-7 minutes away from the hotel.
Okay.
They play sci-fi and horror movies on the big
TVs. Oh, really?
And they play metal music, and all the food is named after bands.
Oh, really?
Or songs or whatever.
Okay.
But it's past the gimmick of that. It's really good food.
Okay.
So I really suggest checking it out if you haven't already or haven't heard of it. Go early. You're going to want to go. If you go around 7-8 o'clock, it's going to be filled with people from Adepticon.
Okay.
It's awesome. Like, yeah. So what else? Last night was it 2 nights ago? What night? This is Friday.
Around Friday morning.
Yeah, so 2 days ago was the GW preview.
Yes.
What did you think about that?
So I was there'd been so many reveals leading up to it with all the Chaos models that I was genuinely, I didn't know what they were going to show. And I we were kind of speculating on as we were coming, what do you think they're going to show? And I was like, I'm hoping they show some Warcry stuff because I'm kind of curious about Warcry. I don't know, probably some more Sisters of Battle stuff. But in terms of, I think they've shown all the Chaos stuff at this point. I don't know, maybe they're holding out like some Berserkers or something.
Yeah, maybe it was another unit.
Yeah, that they've been kind of, because they're like, well, we'll save this so that we have something to show. But every time I turn around, like Games Workshop is just doing more and more.
Yeah.
And so the dwarves for Age of Sigmar looked really great. I thought that was pretty impressive. Obviously, Slaanesh Demon stuff is the talk of the town.
That greater demon. I mean, it looks, because for a long time, everyone's thinking that GW is trying to hide Slaanesh, mothball Slaanesh, that it doesn't fit their image anymore.
I think they've just been trying to figure out how do we revitalize and make this something that we want.
No, it's tricky.
Share.
It's very tricky.
Yeah.
So I'm with, because how do you have that mass market appeal, but yet have this thing in here that potentially could turn away a large market?
Yeah. And I mean, what's very interesting. I mean, if you even read Black Library books, what's interesting is there is never any sex in Black Library books. There's tons of violence. Like, violence is okay. One could argue the sex aspect of Slaanesh is maybe kind of violent in its own way. but the thing about Slaanesh, and we did an episode about, each of the powers of Chaos. And honestly, Slaanesh is I had the least interest in it. But doing that episode, I learned the most. Like, I think it's one of our better episodes because I learned a lot from it. And I realized, Slaanesh is about excess in all things.
Mm-hmm.
Not, you could have excessive gluttony, which people tend to associate with Nurgle. But really, and the realm of Slaanesh, and as you move your way into there, you're passing all these different things that are enticing. Not everybody's enticed by the same thing. Yep. So I think the Keeper of Slaanesh is a perfect model.
Well, the models have always kind of boiled down to that very surface level stuff.
Yeah.
The models or whatever. Yeah. And I think that with like the harpist
demon. Yeah, yeah.
And now,
which is horrifying.
Right. And then you move, into where we just saw now the pinnacle with the demon here. I think they nailed it. I'm not trying to be just a fanboy.
Yeah, I mean, I think they nail it too. I'm not going to collect that army. Yeah. It's really not for me. I mean, in terms of, like, it's just not my style.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
I'm more into the magic, like, thing. Like, I like the Tzeentch thing. But, like, I can see why people will collect it. Like, I think the model's fantastic. I'm glad to have new models to the range that will make interesting opponents and that kind of thing.
It's filled. They showed all the greater demons side by side.
Oh, yeah.
Wise. And this
it's tall.
It's epic, but it's still, it's statuesque and and beautiful and deadly is what it,
I love I love how it's almost divided literally down the middle as male, female.
Yeah.
Like, it's really well done.
Yeah.
I think really nailed
the aesthetic.
Yeah. And I like the options you're getting with it too. Like, you get different webs. You have like a shield option. It looks sick, dude.
Yeah. So we got to see that. And then the Warcry. Now, we talked a little bit about skirmish games. I don't know if that was the lost segment or not. The one we didn't record, or the mic, where we didn't have the mic before. But Warcry, they finally revealed that they would be
more than just the chaos factions.
Right. Which, yeah, I mean, I'd heard people going into it saying, oh, it's just the chaos stuff. And I had not heard that. Like, I wasn't paying real close attention. And then as they started kind of talking about the story and they were like, well, it's, you know, all these chaos people kind of fighting for Archaon's attention. Mm-hmm. They're being summoned to...
I bought that story.
Yeah, the same like, thing. I thought it was cool. It's a cool story. Yeah. I'm like, okay, yeah, cool. Like, oh, it's kind of a bummer that's... Like, and I'm super into chaos, so I would have bought it anyway, right? But I'm like, ah, it's kind of a bummer. I was
would
really
be a Zinchi warband, you know?
Yeah, of course. Okay. But I was kind of more hoping it would be more like, Mordheim?
Yeah.
Right? I was kind of looking for a skirmish level that kind of includes all the factors. I was looking for kill team for fantasy.
Yep.
And,
good news.
Yeah, good news. Sounds like it's going to be kill team for fantasy. So I am, I'm genuinely excited about it again.
Yeah.
Especially at a skirmish level. I don't get a lot of time to play Age of Sigmar, even though I have two armies for it, but skirmish stuff, like, I can fit in a lot easier.
Well, I mean, it's hard to divvy up your hobby time, and then you're like, oh, do I have 3 hours to do this? I kind of want to dabble in it.
Yeah.
This is great. And I mentioned this before, but the Kill Team game itself it brought back people that I started this game with way back in the early days, the 90s or whatever.
Well, I'm supposed to be playing a Kill Team tournament right now, but I dropped
it. Revitalized them. And I think that's going to, similar thing is going to happen with, I'm going to say fantasy battle, you know, Sigmar, but fantasy battle stuff now.
I hope so. Well, Sigmar's kind of taking off. I mean, we just heard Matt Weeks, we were having lunch with him, and we just heard him saying, I could have sold way more tables of it if, one, we had the space, and two, we had the terrain, because it has really exploded. To me, when you come here to Adepticon and you see all the armies on the table and you see the various paint levels of players, when you, and a lot of people talk about Horus Heresy and they're like, that's where the real, you know, excellent
modelers and painters are.
And I'm not going to say they aren't, like, there's some great representations up there, but when you want to see like the classic painters, a lot of those fantasy painters have moved over to Age of Sigmar. Now they finally like realize, hey, this is actually fun. They move over there. You see, honestly, some of the pinnacle painters of that fantasy
stuff.
The
models are actually on the Sigmar side are typically more detailed.
Yeah.
Like have more little nooks and crannies and pouches and buckles and stuff.
They lend themselves well to those kind of paint schemes, I think. And so I'm constantly amazed when I walk through there. I would argue, and I'll probably get some heat for this, but I would argue the best fantasy painters are probably topping the best 40k painters.
That's a strong statement.
You know? And that's not to say it's definitive.
Oh, you don't have to defend it.
No, but what I'm saying is I think you have an older school fantasy group than 40k group.
Again, this is just my feeling. It could be.
Yeah, but and for a while they kind of left, I think, when fantasy battles kind of went
through a transition. It was a very difficult, it was a long road to get to where
it was a painful birth.
Kind of
like Slaanesh.
I'm playing Sigmar. I ran through a game of Sigmar with a buddy who'd never played this version. And he came like two, 3 days later, he messaged me. He's like, I really had a good time. But it's different. It's still different than 40K.
It's very, I mean, there's similarities, but enough differences that you don't feel like, I'm just playing fantasy 40K.
So like 40K is my wife. Sigmar is my girlfriend. Most of the time's got to go. That was something we used to say back. She's never going to hear me say that now.
My wife doesn't listen to my show either.
Oh, but but it's hard to work all that stuff in.
Yeah.
And so getting this kind of skirmish level for these models will be fun. Because I've been painting for Adepticon and I've swore to myself, the next thing I paint is not going to have any metals on it. So I'm going to paint some demons. I'm tired of painting metallics.
Okay.
So I'm going to paint some demons. So wouldn't it be cool to kind of paint for a purpose? And that's getting ready to
stuff. Yeah, I think it looks good. So what else did we see? We saw Warcry. We saw the Slaanesh stuff. Honestly, the 50 Shelves of Grey video, which is online, like everybody in the audience was laughing at that. It was
funny.
Really, really well done.
Mm-hmm.
Any speculation there?
You know, I guess if I had to guess, it's probably going to be some airbrush related.
I think it's an airbrush.
Because
it's a Citadel airbrush.
Because they've got the airbrush paints.
Yeah.
And then they had that airbrush product.
That's true. I didn't even think about the airbrush paints.
The one that looked like the flamer.
Yeah, that thing was a piece of junk.
I mean, well, it didn't fit any needs. It did nothing. And I think that there's been a long enough time for me to refine that. But I'm guessing, I'm stabbing in the dark.
My guess is a paintbrush. I think they partnered probably with somebody and they can, the power of having that amount of money is they can, you know, buy in bulk and reduce the cost and then slap a Citadel logo on it, raise the cost and still make a profit. But I'll bet you anything. Well, like, I jokingly said it was a line of Sharpie pins.
But no joke, like Nuln Oil also got people painting more than they used to do. So this could just be a better wash.
Dude, the introduction of washes changed my life.
That's,
but
Agrax, well, what is it?
Agrax Urshape.
It's not Agrax then.
I can't remember what it used to be.
Devlin Mud.
Yeah.
Devlin Mud is what it was. So, but those things got people their stuff painted.
Yeah.
So we'll, sure. We'll see how this could be something like that. I mean, I don't know. Whatever, but I have to agree.
It's going to be, they don't make a video for Agrax Urshape.
They should. They should carry that thing around here. Let me tell you, Carl, you want to know my real
hero? Maybe they'll sell it by the court.
Besides you being my actual Warhammer hero, is Agrax Earth Age.
Probably. Yeah. You know what mine is right now are the Artist Inks, Dalaroni Artist Inks. Like, you know, we talk about it all the time on my show, but man, those have changed my airbrushing life.
Yeah, that's cool.
Like, without a doubt.
When you find a product that works for you, and that's kind of what...
Shading, coloring, like the translucent inks on there just are a marvel to work. They will change your life for shading stuff. It's fantastic.
Finding those good products, and that's one thing when, as we see more people come into this hobby, some of the weathering and stuff that I do, the products are from the historical figure.
They do. Want to talk about the guys who've been painting a while.
They've got it down to an actual science. You know, you were
actually the bronze buttons on those jackets were a little lighter.
You're using 1947 bronze.
This
is a 1943 uniform. That's
can't I just paint them like ultramarines?
But no, they're products, the enamel products and some of the brands they have products that are so specific. If you want this type of environment streaking or grime or whatever, then you go to this. And so finding the products that really do what you want them to do. Some of them are out there, and the more that we can get at GW on the same rack, I'm all sure about it.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the preview was pretty good. I was hoping we'd get to like try Warcry, like, because the first time they did the preview, we got to try Shadespire.
Yes, yeah.
I was wondering maybe we'll go through the door and we'll get to try Warcry or something, but, you know, or see demos of it. Yeah. That would have been I think that would have been really, really cool, but I'm excited about it.
Yeah. I think it's going to be fun. You know, and then I don't know how they're going to top Abaddon for a while as far as like models go, but we're continuously impressed. But, and then there was more Sigmar terrain stuff, which is neat. I mean, I heard kind of mixed feelings about the introduction of the terrain stuff, but I don't see how it's ever not going to be a positive to have more themed stuff with a function on the table.
I don't know why you would. Yeah. Well, I certainly.
Well, we have a diverse hobby with lots of opinions.
lots of opinions. Yeah, I mean, I think that in general, I like the fact that they're previewing this stuff at events. Like, we did not see this kind of thing 2 years ago, three years ago, right? And so clearly they're engaged with everybody and they're trying to build excitement around it. And they are. I mean, people walk out of there talking. 2 minutes later, it's online. Yep. You know, I think they're smart that they head off everybody and their mother posting pictures and just say, here's the actual good pictures. Here's the videos. And they have it all prepped in advance. I thought that was well done. It's fun.
It is.
One thing that does drive me nuts in those events is the host of questions that they take afterwards, where people are asking questions that if we were going to show you that or talk about it, we would have just talked about
What's the next one? What's the next
how
thing?
How come? When are you going to do Berserkers? Well, if we were going to tell you that, we would have told you that. If we were going to show you Berserkers, we would have shown you Berserkers.
People want to know. They want to see how they respond, the look on their face.
You know, I hear your point. Like, you could trip him up and he'll say,
it's tomorrow.
You're not going to trip him up. No. You're not going to see, like, a lot of times this is the answer you're going to get. Hey, wouldn't it be cool if you guys did something like this? Yeah, that would be cool, wouldn't it? Like, that's the most, that's like as close as they'll come to affirming something. Yeah. You know,
right. That would be cool.
Other than that, I'm just kind of like, really? Like, ask something that you actually think they can answer. Yeah. Last year, to toot my own horn a little bit, last year they revealed the Edeneth Deepkin.
Mm-hmm.
And I told you this, like, I asked the question because I had it wasn't just about, hey, I want people to see me talk. I can have people hear me talk all the time. The question I had was, can you tell us a little bit about how this army plays on the table, like thematically? And you could see the visible relief on his face where he's like, oh my God, an answer I can actually give, right? Yeah. And he was like, they work with the tide and like they have this, you know, and everybody's like, oh yeah, it sounds pretty interesting. I'm like, yeah, I mean, I was very curious, like that had me excited.
Yeah, I got an army of me as soon as I could.
Oh, they're beautiful. But I wish people would kind of ask questions about what they just talked about.
It's so hard not to get caught up in the moment. To play devil's advocate, it's hard not to get caught up in the moment.
I get it. I mean, you know, I get it, but
yeah.
Who's going to be the next Primarch you release? We don't know anything about another Primarch.
Like,
never heard of him. Mind you, it was an 11-year-old kid that asked that. All right.
See, you're making fun of somebody. No,
I am not. I'm not. I get it.
Carl,
I
was 11 once. It's absolutely awesome to be able to record in the room with you hang out with you. And thanks for coming. And it's a big night for you tonight. Going to have the Warhammer Heroes dinner.
Yeah, I'd be lying if I would say I wasn't excited about it.
Yeah.
It's flattering. It's flattering that people nominate you for something like that. I brought a suit. I'm going to literally wear a suit to it.
That's cool.
Like, it's not even formal, but like they're, because I was like, well, what's, they say it's like smart dress, like don't wear shorts.
And yeah.
You wear a button-up shirt. I'm going to wear a suit. And they're like, you don't have to wear a suit. I'm wearing a suit.
Nice. Well, dude, man, congratulations. I'll follow up with you again, see how that went.
Yeah. I'll post a bunch of pictures too.
All right, man. We'll see you.
Hey, thank you.
We're sponsored by Firmaterra. With their study, lightweight and portable tables, you can make war anywhere. Please visit them at www.firmaterra.com.
Hey everybody, we are back here with Skari.
I am the Darkkin.
The Archon.
That's right. In the spire, I look down at mere mortals as I sip on the souls of those I have destroyed.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about the faction changes for the ITC and in this segment, and I want to talk a little bit about how to affect variance, how to pull odds in your favor.
May the odds be ever in your favor, TPM.
So a single faction army, no skin off your nose.
But hey, I'm so excited about, well, I voted for single faction army, but being that that's what I play, it's refreshing to know that now I'll be competing against folks that have the same sort of stakes as me.
Yeah, this is causing a little bit of concern for people, because the points that go into those categories for if just to see who wins are not being retroactively changed like some of the other points were in the during these mid-season juggles.
Right, I wouldn't fret. Like, the biggest reason would be, I guess it would be how many, they've had more tournaments in the first section of this year than they had in like half the season last year, right? They've just had so it's like I can't blame them. They'd have to go through every event, check every list, you know, and that would, it's just logistically a nightmare.
I do think that the best thing to do is look forward with this change.
Yeah, I agree.
And to just play into it, and then things are going to shake out how they were. Now, I do think it's right for them to feel something as those guys were playing by different rules than are now, but that they were still playing by the rules as they were then. And we will look back on this a couple of years from now, and that will not matter in the slightest.
Exactly. You know, it's like when they changed from to the Gregorian calendar and everybody lost a few days and people freaked out because they were like, you're making our lives shorter.
Yeah. Well, I think everything's going to be fine. And I think this is something that will ultimately people will be very excited about. And like you said, there are people that will be playing under the same stakes, under the same, I don't want to say, restrictions, but even if it is self-imposed restrictions, then whatever, you're at least competing in the same pool.
Exactly. It's honestly just, it's good for the game. And I feel that it'll add a bit of the legitimacy to best of faction awards.
And I like building lists. So when I see something like this, I'm like, wow, let me see what I could actually build and compete with something.
So have you come up with anything fun that you think would be good?
Not yet, but it is an excuse to break the Blood Angels out again.
Ooh, solo Blood Angels. See, I like that. You know, and if you do find the secret source, you know, please share with the world.
Yeah, and Grey Knights too. I mean, it's one of those things. This is kind of an excuse to really start tinkering around, and because, you know, there is life in these codexes.
There is. I feel people are too hard on codexes themselves sometimes.
Well,
I feel that it involves a lot of work, and not everybody wants to put that work into making it work.
This is a decent segue into our next topic, which is about controlling or affecting the variance. And these codexes need a lot to go right. They need basically everything to line up and be exactly how they need it to work, and they don't have a lot of slippage that is afforded some of the other codexes. Because these armies, things like Blood Angels, Grey Knights, well, those are the worst, you know, doing the worst right now, if you ask me.
We're talking statistical averages for competitive 40K.
Right. They need things to go well for them. And so if you can put things in your list or do certain things to smooth out some of those rough patches,
I definitely agree. There's things that you can do. Like, there's a few caveats. Like, when you're building a list, you know, a couple of mantras, as you say, that we like to adhere to, like, more boys, less toys, right? So don't, like, overdo it on upgrades. But there are always things you can find in your list that will help stack those odds in your favor. And no matter how, quote, bad your army is, that there are always ways that you can improve your odds.
Yeah, and I think that trying to find those and include them, even if you didn't originally think that they were a really optimized choice, something like a lieutenant, or the aspiring, or what's the chaos champion?
Well, the lords, and then you get like reroll wounds in combat, or the new apostle.
Yeah, well, yeah, but there's the Chaos Lord, which allows you to reroll hits, and then the Exalted Champion in the Chaos, and like the Lieutenant, as you can reroll failed hit rolls for models if this target is an enemy character. But they also have the Aspire to Glory. You can reroll failed wound rolls in the fight phase for friendly Legion units that are within 6 inches of an Exalted Champion.
It might not seem like a lot, or it might seem like an inefficient use of points sometimes, but those rerolls, if you're using them, will add up throughout the course of a game.
That's it. You're basically, what I mean is you're insulating yourself from a bad round of dice, but you're also picking up a few extra wounds over the course of an entire game, and that could be the difference of whittling down someone's warlord. It could be the difference between chewing through a unit for control of an objective.
Yeah, it also saves you command points. You know, you don't have to sort of spend points on rerolling things when that you have stuff like that built into your list. It's one of the reasons choices like Rebute Gulliman are so popular amongst Ultramarine players.
Yeah.
Rerolling all hits and all wounds, or, you know, just, it means that you always have a second chance at the dice. We've all been there. You know, you've been there with your crazy Adepticon Necron Undying, right? Where it seems like...
Well, I need to force them to rerolls, but I...
it comes in like multiple stages. There's like, there are overlapping fields of like bonuses that you can give yourself in a variety of different codexes. And you sort of have the ability to pick and choose the bonuses that best suit the math in your army. You know, like if you're doing a close combat
the
army,
the math you need, right?
Exactly, yeah. Right. So you don't have to look at all these choices and go, oh, well, that's useless or that's useless. It's not necessarily useless if you're going to use it.
Yeah, I think investing in some of this insulation is a way that some of the, now we're talking about, you know, I was just talking about the Virulent Blessing for, you know, taking that demon guy to cast something on the Lord Discordant, but
yeah,
you know, they could easily also be cast on a demon for anything that has that Nurgle Demon rule, and then you're adding that +1 to wound roll. When you see a +1, that's pretty big because you don't have to like double someone's toughness or whatever to get into another category. At worst, you're looking at a 5+ where you were needing the 6 before. A lot of instances, you're bringing that down to a 4.
Yeah, the +1 to wound, you know, and especially with the new Chaos book, looking at things like the Apostle that has like all these prayers that they can do, you know, it really, and then stacking it with something like a unit of possessed, right, with a greater possessed for +1 strength nearby, with a dark apostle for a +1 to wound, add in veterans of the long war for a +2 to wound, and all of a sudden guys that were wounding a knight on 5s are now wounding a knight on 3s.
Yeah.
Which, if you do the math, is a huge jump in that variance and probability.
That's
of doing
actually
damage.
What I brought up in the Terminator article was lightning claws. When then you're rerolling to wound that for all of them. Now that's not counting on paying for the Exalted Champion.
Right, 100%.
If they didn't have that innately, then you would then be looking at that guy as a way to smooth out your variance.
Right, that or psychic power or some sort of like ability that's built into like a unit, right? Exactly, 100%.
Yeah, I think that most armies now, that seems to be the template for the edition, is that armies have a big general guy that will allow you to figure out, you know, get better hits. And then there's things along the line, down in the lower point choices, the next tier down, that lets you mitigate the wound rolls. And auras. Things have auras.
Yeah, and it's about combining these auras to sort of get the best sort of abilities. And I like how the books have been written, giving you the option of sort of picking the best ones for the job for your own army itself. And you're not like hamstrung on like one specific choice. So you can still kind of really forge the narrative and sort of make it like a very thematic sort of thing. Or you can really tweak and squeeze every bonus and possible choice out of your book. And if you're talking about, like, there's competitive ways to do it, but there's also narrative ways to do it, you know, like using the hero rules out of the chapter proof book and things like that, that you can kind of make any character sort of give those sort of variance bonuses as well.
Yeah, that's a good point, you know, and I wanted to bring this up because as we move into a system where people will be competing for these factions, that no one likes going to a tournament getting their teeth kicked in for some long-term, some end of the road payout all the time. I don't think. I think it would be you actually want to see some success along the way.
Right.
So how do you do it? And I think the way to do that is to, like you said, pick the right things for your army that maybe you wouldn't have picked otherwise, but to really examine what the long-term game length benefit, even over the course of the whole tournament. If you could flip, if one combat phase would flip your tournament record, your floor, your ceiling, like we were talking about on the episode from last week, which, by the way, I apologize. I uploaded accidentally the episode two episodes ago. It went up first, and it took a long time to recycle through the aggregators to pick up that episode where we talk about floors and ceilings of player potential. And so if you didn't hear episode 277, you may need to go to the website forgenarrative.net to listen to it, or to YouTube, or to one of the aggregators that updated. My sincere apologies. That was like the sixth anniversary show, and I, of course, screw it up, you know.
Yeah. It only happens once every 60 years, folks.
Right. About probably once or twice a year, admittedly. But it's very infrequently with the number of shows we put out. But I wanted to put out, or just wanted to let everybody know that I apologize and that their ears were not deceiving them. And there is an episode out there that if you didn't hear it, you could find it.
Now, it's also important to remember for everybody who's going out there, you know, you're going to be competing with your single faction list, or you do mix and match to get the best of all worlds, is give a minute to really sort of understand what variance is and understand the impact of some of these bonuses that they have. Because a rerolling ones might not seem like a lot, but over the course of, what, six games at a tournament, or 10 games during the course of your like competitive league at your store, rerolling ones in a lot of scenarios will add up a lot.
Yeah, even if it's points. And that's what I was mentioning before, is that if you feel like that you just need to flip one of these phases one time, then it's probably worth it to look at including that in your list if it isn't there already. And then, you know, also back to this is figuring out if your detachment configuration is correct. You may need more command points to make something happen.
Right.
And if you aren't maximizing that, then you're obviously not giving yourself enough gas to help this out.
You know, being able to use that extra stratagem to reroll wounds or whatever it is, or attack again because you've decided to buff your unit till the end of the phase. And it just gives you that opportunity to get that one last swing in before you've cashed in all those command points. Oh, you make a good point there.
Well, even in Grey Knights, there's a few stratagems that if your burn rate doesn't match with how often you need those things, then you've got to figure out a way to shake it up. And I'm not saying I have the answer. I'm just saying these are the things that I would look at while I'm trying to perfect this faction specific list.
And Grey Knights, like, don't get me wrong, there's ways to make them work. Just don't be afraid to try out different things, you know?
Yeah, I think that's it. Figuring, but looking objectively at what your army is doing and where you're struggling. Like, I told a story about being taken to the church of five pluses, and, you know, but I'm positive there's something in that game that I could have done a little bit better that may have given me a few more points at the end of that game.
Talking about games that surprised me, recently I played a league game against a gentleman called Caleb in Toronto. It was a great fun game, and he good shout out to him. We've never played before, and it was for our league, and he's playing Orcs, right? Orcs, not necessarily one of the most accurate armies in the world. Since you play Orcs, I'm assuming you would know.
Yep.
But he ran his entire army as freebooters. Now, they have a cool little ability that as soon as one Orc unit destroys an enemy unit, the rest of the freebooters units within 24 of this unit gain +1 to hit till the end of the phase. Now, you might not find hundreds of Orc shots scary when they're hitting on fives, but as soon as one of your unit dies and all of a sudden two Gorkonauts and a super shock attack gun are hitting you on fours, not fives, it becomes terrifying. Needless to say, I did lose that game, but it was impressive, because all he did was take an obscure sort of set of rules that I haven't really heard many people talk about online, and that really skews with the variance of the Orc sort of mantra of we have lots of shots, but we don't know how to hit the broadside of a barn. But, and then kind of skews it, going, you know what? Now we're actually decent at shooting, and we still have all the amounts of shots. So it's just really cool.
Well, if he invests in the, and whatever the, if he invests in the early unit shooting, then he more quickly triggers that for the units around him. Exactly. So, you know, a couple of command points here and there, and then he turns the rest of those units into snipers, essentially.
Yeah. And let me tell you that shock attack gun hitting on fours when it rolls an 11 strength is a scary proposition.
That's funny.
Yeah, it was terrifying. Yeah. Let's say that my Talos died really quickly.
Yeah, it is pretty satisfying when you roll that 11. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Man. All right, well, let's take another quick break. Then we'll come back and talk with the guys from CK Studios, talk about what they've been up to. And then you and I will come back and we'll do a hobby segment.
I love it.
See you in a couple minutes.
You are tuned into Forge the Narrative.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to a community spotlight segment on Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. I'm joined tonight by Justin Kiefer and Caleb Weissenbach.
Hey, thanks for having us on, Paul. We really appreciate it. Helping spread the word of some airbrush loving.
Well, you guys have some things coming up where you have some painting classes we'll talk about. You guys are contributing to the Nova Charitable Foundation with some paint talents. So, Justin, people may recognize your voice from being on the Independent Characters.
Yeah, I'm privileged to be on that podcast once in a while. Carl's he's willing to put up with me about once or more sometimes.
it's certainly a labor of love.
It's fun.
I can empathize.
Yeah.
Well, where would you like to start?
I guess just Caleb. I guess we could dive into kind of starting with CK Studios and what we're all about.
You know, just recently, Justin's a new addition to the team. We've grown quite a bit actually this last year. We brought on Justin. We brought on Sam Lentz Fantasy Art of Sam Lentz. And we also brought on Vince Ventrella from Hobby Cheats. So we were able to expand our offerings. Before it was just me and Kat doing the airbrushing class. So we're part of CK Studios. For the people that are kind of familiar with us, it seems like we really specialize in airbrushing. I mean, we offer a ton of different classes. I've been teaching at Adepticon and ReaperCon and Nova and events like that for like the last 5 years or so. I think we kind of found our niche here in airbrushing, and the popularity of our airbrushing 101 class just skyrocketed and allowed us to kind of jump into offering a whole bunch of different options and classes for everybody.
It can be a pretty weighty topic. I mean, the airbrush, you can't just run down and get one thing and come back and be awesome at it. You've got to get several things and then go through the process of that learning curve where you're basically producing nothing or nothing you're proud of for some period of time, you know, and then you kind of reach a breakthrough.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the problems with that learning curve, too, is if you go online, you go to YouTube, for example, and you type in airbrushing miniatures, everybody has their own take on it. And it's almost like information overload, you know, where it's just like, what do I thin with? What PSI do I shoot at? And it's ultimately a tool that you need to kind of play around with to get the feel of it. But to find what works for you, you know, and that's what we kind of try to demonstrate in our classes, is there's no really... There's some wrongs, but there's more rights than wrongs, and you have to find out what works for you.
Yeah, so you guys demystify it a little bit.
Yeah. Everybody's going to have different ways of thinning their paints and different PSIs, air pressure they like to shoot at, and everybody's going to develop their own style. You know, I mean, I use a lot of Flow Improver. Caleb tends to not use as much as I do, and everybody has their own style. But ultimately, we try to, like you said, demystify it and make it achievable for people.
And you guys have some classes coming up at Adepticon.
Yeah, Justin won't be at Adepticon. I'll be there. Sam will be there. Vince will be there. I'll be teaching a few of the basics, some of the getting started classes and stuff like that. You know, the convention classes, it's difficult because you're so limited in time. So you can't really, I mean, we can kind of show you some stuff, but I don't think, I mean, in my opinion, I guess it's from, you know, growing and being able to do the weekender class and stuff like that. There's just not as much meat in the convention.
Yeah, at the convention class, though, you can figure out if it's for you. I mean, because you've got some sample equipment there. You get your hands on a miniature. You get to spend some time with somebody who knows at least where to start with the PSI, what the consistency of the paint should look like. You can show someone what that paint should look like, and then maybe start them on a journey.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's what I like, because really when I started, I actually borrowed an airbrush from a friend of mine, and that airbrush was so clogged up on the inside that it really wouldn't spray any paint. And I thought that was my fault. I thought I was doing something that I shouldn't be doing. You know, I'm thinking, man, I'm so terrible at this. So I had one of my good buddies, you know, GMM, kind of show me what's up. He's like, oh, you should be hearing air coming out of this thing. You need to take that thing apart.
Yeah, I think my first airbrush was like a tester's Aztec brush that you couldn't take apart. And, you know, I got like maybe my original Dark Eldar army kind of base sprayed with it. And, you know, there's no way to really properly clean it. And that was my first experience. And then I went to learn some of the more advanced Badger brushes, and oh, okay, that light bulb went off. Okay, this is a little easier now.
You may not get every single thing that you want answered in there because, like, the time constraints you're talking about, but I think it's a really good opportunity to, especially if you're trying to get into it, have somebody show you, you know, what exactly to do that doesn't have, because you see all these tutorials on YouTube, like we were talking about, they jump right into it and they expect you to be, you know, have either a baseline skill or they found their own path to get to where they're doing. And, you know, again, being able to ask the questions of someone specifically and then see it, I think, is a lot of value there.
Yeah, there's no substitution for that analog, you know, in person. Let's really see what you're doing here up close and personal and give that immediate advice, right? And our classes, you know, tend to be a minimum of 15 to about 30 is about the max. But even with that, we're able to get really hands-on with people and really guide them.
Now, I know we jumped right into it, but where can people find some information about these classes and the things that you're going to be doing at conventions and then what we're about to talk about, which is this giant project you guys are about to embark on?
You can find us over on Facebook at CK Studios. Just do a search for CK Studios / come paint with us. Our schedule is on there. You'll see all the classes. We're spread out all over Canada and the Northwest. Man, we're a lot in the Northwest this year. But we're all over the United States with all the offerings. Our basic 101 class, which is kind of what we're talking about, me and Justin teach. And then also some of the more advanced classes that we're going to have with Vince and Sam. And yeah, you guys can find that whole schedule over at CK Studios. That's the easiest way.
That's awesome. I'll put a link in the show notes. And then you guys are going to be helping out with the Nova Open Charitable Foundation. Is that right?
That is correct.
So tell me about that.
We have a small little model that we're going to be working on as a team. Nothing big, just a Warlord Titan. And we're going to spread the workload on this beast amongst our whole team. Caleb and I are going to be doing most of the initial laying down of the paint on this sucker. And we have Vince and Sam that are going to be doing a lot of the freehand work on it. We have Carl Tuttle from the Independent Characters podcast, who's going to be doing a lore write-up on it. So he's going to be creating a backstory behind this behemoth. We have Devin working on the base. So it's kind of just this big share the love kind of project, which helps when you're looking at a model of this magnitude.
It can be very intimidating. Again, we were talking about airbrushing, but you could stare at this model in the bag for years and never feel like you can get it on the table.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things when you do a Titan, you just have to keep your head down, to the grinder, so to speak. I mean, when Caleb and I were sitting there, we recently got together for a weekend and we were just surrounded by resin bits and he's hacking and I'm chopping away. But, you know, we were having a good time with it and just keeping our head down and grinding away. That's all you really can do, right?
One stroke after the other.
Oh, yeah. That thing's massive.
And talk about like the beauty of an airbrush. You know, could you imagine brush painting something like that?
Oh,
I mean, How would you even? It's painful to think about.
Can people are people going to be able to follow along with the progress of this thing?
Oh yes, yeah. We'll have plenty of pictures, work in progress pictures on our Facebook page, right, Caleb? And
yeah, that'll be on our Facebook page. Nova is going to be doing a lot of promoting of it. It's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to the book. You know, creating the book is going to be fun.
And this will be one of their raffles, so people will be able to buy tickets to try to win this thing.
Right.
That's right.
Do you know what those tickets are going to be going for yet?
No idea.
Yeah, that's all his group, I guess. But
I want to say, I think last year, the Warlord that they did last year, I want to say it was like $5 a ticket.
Yeah, I think it was $5 a ticket. And the Charitable Foundation is going to have lots of different things that you can buy tickets for. So there'll be some $1 things, some $2 things. Look, I mean, this is what it was last year from my memory. I don't have any advanced knowledge of this. I'll try to get Mr. Taylor on again. But there was lots of things that you could buy tickets for. And then the top end was that $5 or so. And I think the guy that won it last year, he may only bought like 5-10 tickets, maybe 2 tickets.
That's amazing. No, hey, somebody's got to win it.
Yeah, somebody's got to win it. It might as well be you. You know, you don't have any expectations of winning, but maybe you just want to at least be in the pool, right? it's for right. A worthy cause.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that when I feel confident that when all said and done, this thing is going to be quite a thing to look at. Between all the talent we have working on it, it's going to be impressive.
Oh, I bet. I mean, this is going to be something that people treasure. I mean, that's really what it is. I mean, this is a lot of skill, a lot of years of experience going into this. And then you've got some extra stuff. I mean, when you say working on the base, you mean somebody's going to be working on the base. This is going to be a truly scenic and epic piece when you guys are done with it.
Oh, yes. And I think the color combinations that Caleb and I have come up with, it's going to work pretty well. Yeah, it'll be something.
Man, that's pretty nice. I can't wait to see this. I'll probably chip in a little bit too for some tickets.
Heck yeah.
No expectations of winning, but you never know. So again, like you said, somebody has to.
Yeah, that's it. Buy a ticket or 10. Yeah, hey, somebody's got to win it.
Nice.
Let's see if it's you.
So you mentioned the color schemes. So you have all that planned out right now?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think pretty much.
Well, it's going to speak. It's one of those models that speaks to you, though, right? I mean, as you start working on it, it kind of starts to tell its own story.
Oh yeah, this thing shouts at you.
Well, what weapons does it have?
All of them, right?
Well, it's got the volcano cannon, and then it's got the big plasma gun. I forget what that thing's called, the like plasma annihilator or something. And then and then somehow incorporated into the base and then still usable is going to be the power claw. Because, I mean, you got a Titan, you got to have that power claw on it. Yeah. You know?
I feel like there's something cool about a Titan running across the field to punch another Titan.
Yeah, that is pretty cool.
All right. So, Caleb, people can find you at Adepticon this year.
Yeah. We'll be at Adepticon. Kat will be kind of concentrating over at the hobby area. She's kind of learning how to start to run that area. She's going to help out with Damon. I'll be in classes, a bunch of airbrush classes. Unfortunately, I mean, everything at Adepticon sells out so fast that there's no tickets available. I mean, if you want to try to get in a class, I'd say just show up. I always get a few drops. People just can't make it to class. So that's usually the best option. I think the waiting lists are pretty stacked out, but we're only a week out pretty much.
Yeah, Adepticon, we're basically in Adepticon Eve. So this is going to be exciting. I will probably also be in the hobby area finishing the armies that I was supposed to paint before I got there. But that's neat, though. That, I mean, Adepticon does have a painter's table that's not just, it's not a 4x6. You know, it's 40 feet of space for people to sit down and paint.
For all of them procrastinators.
Or some model medic stuff action going on.
Right.
Well, we'll see. I'm looking forward to it. I said I will put links to everything that we've talked about in the show notes. And is it cool if we check back in later on down the road to see how this thing is going and maybe talk a little bit more about the effort for raffle tickets?
Oh, absolutely. I'd love it.
Caleb, did you want to kind of go really briefly over kind of what the different classes kind of entitled, the 101, 102, 103? Just real quick.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, please.
So, just real quick. So if you guys aren't familiar with CK Studios, we kind of started out, we mentioned that basic airbrushing class, that 101 class that me and Justin are teaching. That class we paint on a GW Contemptor Dreadnought, pretty much all the students. A few brought Redemptors and stuff like that. So it's a little bit flexibility. Right. Yeah, mm-hmm. it's going to really give you a nice palette to work on, you know, a nice canvas, I guess I should say, to work on to really adapt to the airbrush. And like you were talking about, you know, it's so difficult with that first learning curve. And that's the goal of the 101, is to just get you comfortable with the airbrush, whether you're a beginner or you feel that you're kind of getting a feel for the airbrush and you just want to learn a bit more. The first day, it just really goes over a bunch of exercises on learning brush control and trigger control and how to prep your paint and how PSI affects the brush. And just, I mean, it goes really through the meat of the actual science behind airbrushing, I guess you would call it. And then we get to paint on the dreadnought, and you know, students that have been in our class will talk about the ugly phase and all that stuff. You guys get to enjoy all of that stuff. But at the end of it, we go into
some more advanced techniques as well, right?
Yeah. On Sunday, we're going to go into more of the techniques for airbrushing. We learn a bit about painting with light. We learn about composition and contrast and everything like that. At the end of the class, you end up with, most of our students say it's the best model that they've painted up to that point. You know, I've had like Chris Bohr in there. Obviously he didn't say that, but for the most part, you know, the whole goal of that class is to just build confidence in your airbrush, right. Learn how to use your airbrush and adapt to it, make it a tool that you're going to put into your work, you know, into your miniatures. Then after that, we used to have them, they were called the 102 and 103 and stuff like that, but it was causing confusion because people were like, well, I didn't take the 101, so I can't take these other classes. And all of our classes are designed to be standalones. All of our classes, we've had brand new bare bones beginner airbrushers sit in on these classes and put out a model just as good as some of the veteran airbrushers out there. So we'll definitely take you through the process no matter what class it is. So we offer the large figure class. That's another class that I like to teach. That one focuses more on learning to use the detail of your airbrush. We paint more on organics. We're going to paint on some leather and some cloth, skin tones. We were painting on a large 75 millimeter orc. And the highlight of that class was the students would actually go in, and Justin will attest to this, they'll go in and they'll actually airbrush paint the mouth of the orc. And you're going to do everything from painting the gum lines to painting the teeth, painting the tongue. You actually paint the plaque on the teeth. I mean, that's the detail you can get out of a brush. And I don't care if it's a Sotar or if it's a Grex or if it's a hard-earned Steenbeck. We're going to show you how to get that max performance. And that's what that large figure class was all about, was, I mean, learning organics and learning soft surfaces and everything like that. But it was really about finding out how far you can go with the airbrush. You do a little bit of masking just to learn masking, but then after that, it's all detail work and really buckling down and learning the airbrush. It's awesome. It's got a bit of color theory into it. We have a lot of students that come out of that class and they start to envision doing more display painting and more competition painting and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's nice.
So we've switched over to big time
brush control. When you're painting the teeth on a model with your airbrush, you know, it's like once you do that and you've been doing that fine brush control for 16 hours plus hands on, man, you leave that class a sniper.
Well, yeah. you guys, people don't necessarily always have to come to you. These classes, they can move around.
Oh, yeah.
We're all over. I mean, just looking at the schedule right now, we're down in Houston. We're going to be up in
Canada. Where's that?
On Kingston, Ontario. We're over in Victoria. We're in, Justin, you're going to be teaching in Vancouver. We're down in Olympia. We're going to be back over on the East Coast. We're looking at Atlanta. Justin, you're in Jersey this year. I mean,
that's right,
we're all over. So there's definitely a class there for somebody.
Awesome.
Just definitely look. I mean, if you want to up your game with airbrushing, this is a great opportunity with these classes. And
the proof's in the pudding. People can go online and check out your work and then see if that's something they may want to take advantage of. If it's, either these places where they know you're going to be or maybe get you out to them.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Have a good rest of y'all's night, guys.
All right. Thank you
very much, Paul. Thank you.
FTN is brought to you by Bell of Lost Souls. Check out www.bols.org for the best daily hobby articles on the web.
Hey everybody, we are back. How is it best to follow up a segment with a couple of painters talking about some painting?
Ooh, I love it. It's something that is near and dear to my heart and should be of all of yours.
Well, you started doing something on Twitch, right?
That's right. I've been doing a daily Twitch sit and paint stream, which is called Just Put Paint on It.
Yeah.
And We were the average Joe painters, basically sit and hang out for a couple hours every day, Monday through Friday on Twitch at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And yeah, it's all about just putting paint on it. Hashtag just put paint on it.
Sometimes that's what you got to do. You got to get from one step to the next. And sometimes that takes a little time, but it won't ever happen by itself.
100%. And, you know, whether it's a brand new model, whether it's a model that you've, you know, gotten second or third or fourth hand, a lot of the times all you need to do is grab some paint, grab a brush or an airbrush or a can of primer and just start somewhere.
Well, let's talk the finishing move segment. The core of this segment is spending 5 or 10 minutes on a model to make it look a lot better than it would have if you didn't spend those minutes, and how to spend those minutes. What do you focus on when you're spending those minutes?
Exactly. And one of my favorite segments. So listen up, folks.
Well, thank you. It's one of those things. It's a journey, right? You just have arrows in your quiver that you can fire when the time comes. And that could be painting leather. That could be, how to paint lenses, how to do a beard on something, you know, different textures just to give you a visual appealing look. But now I want to talk about salvaging a model. Salvage in the context that I'm about to say it is a bit of a strong word. But it could easily apply to something you grab off of eBay or get from a swap meet or something like that.
Yeah, it could be anything, a shoebox full of old models your brother passed down to you, or, you know, when you go back home after college and you're rummaging through your basement and you find your old models that you haven't seen in forever.
The one squad of Ultramarines or something you did.
100%. This applies to all of that.
Several weeks ago, I talked about how the Scions troubled me and how my first pass at them was terrible. I mean, it just didn't work out, and I just wasn't happy with the result. And then even at Adepticon, there was a 6 or 7 models that a teammate had brought that didn't quite look like the rest of the army. How do you attack that with the least amount of effort to get it to normalize or to get better or to do that one step that the guy you got the miniature from didn't do in the case of like an eBay salvage? In the case for the models for the team tournament is that the bases just, he had never seen, you know, when one guy does 100 bases and one guy does 6 bases, you know, you're going to get some derivations, I guess, in that, especially when you're 300 miles away.
Yeah, so 100%, especially with the display boards and stuff.
Yeah, so that's what I thought. Like, let's just get those bases up to snuff, and that's easy. It's easy to make a model. But that's one of the things you can do to make models look like they all got off the same bus or if they're at the same skill level is the bases. Like, if you talk to some other really great painters out there, you can ask them, how do I make my models look amazing? Faces and bases.
Yeah, those are things that stand out.
That's it. So, you know, when you get a model, you borrow a model or whatever, or you revisit the model that you did when you first started the army as opposed to when you finished the army, getting those bases all uniform is a way to do that. And that's something you can do in probably 5-10 minutes most of the time. It's either a layer of color you didn't know before or a different texture. You know, I think that's probably the best thing with bases. With something like a salvage of a model, you may get a model with leather pouches and stuff. Going in and doing 2 or 3 minutes on that leather, and the video where Games Workshop does the painting tutorial on Abaddon.
Yep.
Has a clinic for how to do leather in it. It's got that leather, the same leather effect and recipe that people were looking for in the White Dwarf when the G-Sealer cults originally came out. So if you don't have that White Dwarf and you haven't already mastered your leather, I suggest checking out the Abaddon video and skipping right to the leather part.
You know, it's funny how just a little details like that can really make things pop. You know, for a lot of my models, like it's the little vials of poison or drug, mm-hmm. like the little pipes and things and just that sort of thing. But sometimes even taking old models, and even if the paint job's okay, I found even putting like just a quick ink or wash over the model to kind of bring back out the detail and then kind of go over the colors again. Just really depends on how in depth you want to go, or just strip it all and start from scratch.
That's one way of going about it. I think what you'll find is we're all kind of the same as far as like when we're painting our models, we will get to a point with the model and say, this is good enough and put it down. Everyone does that. Yeah. I've spent enough time on this. And so I'm done with it.
I am definitely a victim of this.
Well, we all reach maybe a different point on that journey, but that's kind of the evolution of it. And so when you can come in with fresh eyes, you may be able to find and spend that 5 or 10 more minutes on that and then make it a showcase piece or really make it pop, like you said, because a lot of people don't put patent buttons on a console is another thing.
Right. Or the lenses.
Somebody may come in and go, okay, I put 4 red dots on the 4 buttons and then I'm done. But you put a green dot. You know, I mean, I'm not trying to trivialize it that much, but you know, you do a little bit extra on one of these models and then you've created some visual interest, that makes the model look a lot better. And I think that's probably the summation of it is create that either you're wanting to do something that makes it uniform with the rest of your army. So find out what the easiest way to make it uniform is. That could be painting a helmet or a shoulder pad. Most likely it's a base thing, even if it's raining the bases in a certain color or whatever. Finding something that normalizes
like even something as simple as the trim on the base can make a big difference.
Yeah.
You know, when I was going through and rebasing a lot of my Dark Eldar army, some of the bases had like a brown trim and some had like a gray trim. It was a very subtle difference, but you know, the army, whenever I would take it to a tournament, sometimes it just wouldn't look right. And then after I get back, like, oh, that's right. The bases are not exactly the same. So what I ended up doing was making sure that every time I'd set up an army and get ready to go, I just make sure all the bases are the same. Even when I was allying in some like Eldari stuff or like, Harlequin stuff, I like having all the bases the same across the whole army.
That drives me nuts if I don't.
Yeah.
And I've got some of my Eldar have a super, super dark green rim around the base to where it's almost black. It's so almost black that I forget that it's not black. And then if I pull out a couple of models that I have that just have black around the base, I feel like I want to kick myself.
Yeah. How did I not notice? Yeah. I was thinking so hard about how to change the variants in my list.
Right. There's a lot going on in this hobby, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree, you know.
But a model that you painted 100 years ago or something you got from a swap meet or eBay or whatever, you know, you can see the diamonds in the rough, especially when I'm cruising eBay for some sweet deals on something. I don't know, whatever you're looking for. Sometimes I just cruise it when I get bored. I look at what the auction is and like, oh man, could I actually use this? Is this a diamond in the rough scenario? Sometimes I'm looking for war gear. Like I remember getting really excited sometime where someone had it listed as like, Space Wolf pack or whatever, but it was 10 models and they all had meltaguns. You know, I was like, man, I need 10 meltaguns. But they, you know, they were priced basically like they were bolters, whatever. So I was real happy about that. That's what I'm looking for. But you can also be looking at paint jobs and figure out that can save you some time. And if there's something you can do to make it blend in with your army. So really, you know, examine that. And I think more often than not, it might be possible.
Yeah, and well, bases aside, there's always sometimes you run out of that favorite pot of paint that you've had forever. I had that happen to me recently where you've been using the same sort of recipe for the longest time and you're trying to like revamp your old like army or whatnot and you realize that the paint pot that you're using is dry or they don't make the paint anymore or whatnot. But with a little bit of digging, with a little bit of patience, I'll find you either find someone that's selling that paint that you're looking for or a company makes that paint that is very similar or almost exactly the same as what you use, just by a different name or a different company.
Well, Scar, man, that's some great tips. Where can people find you when you're not on this show?
On planet Earth. No, I'm just kidding. Raiding. No, you can go to, the main way to find me is on YouTube at Scardcast. That's SKARED CAST. And the links to my entire life are on there. So you can look me up.
Well, I really appreciate you pinch hitting for us here.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me on. As always, this has been a blast.
Have a great rest of your night.
Good night, and forge that narrative together.
It's all in the reflexes.